Chapter 29. The Festival of Birds. Waking to the dice, Matt considered going back to sleep until they went away, but at last he got up feeling grumpy. As if he did not have more than enough on his plate already. He chased Narum away and dressed himself, eating the last of the bread and cheese from the night before while he did, then went to check on Oliver. The boy flashed between bursts of yanking on his clothes in a hurry to be out, and stopping entirely with boot or shirt in hand, to spout dozens of questions that Matt answered with half a mind. No, they would not go racing today, and never mind the rich races at the Circuit of Heaven north of the city. Maybe they could go see the menagerie. Yes, Matt would buy him a feathered mask for the festival, if he ever got dressed. That sent him into a flurry. What really occupied Matt's thoughts were those bloody dice. Why had they started up again? He still did not know why they had before. When Oliver was finally clothed, he followed Matt into the sitting room, bubbling with half-heard questions, and bumped him from behind when he stopped dead. Tylin replaced the book Oliver had been reading the night before on the table. "Majesty!" Matt's eyes darted to the door he had locked last night, now standing wide open. "What a surprise!" He pulled Oliver around in front of him, between him and the woman's mocking smile. Well, maybe it was not really mocking, but it surely seemed so right then. She was certainly pleased with herself. "I was about to take Oliver out to see the festival and some traveling menagerie. He wants a feathered mask." He snapped his mouth shut to stop babbling and started edging toward the door, using the boy as a shield. "Yes," Tylin murmured, watching through her eyelashes. She made no move to intervene, but her smile deepened, as if she was just waiting for his foot to land in the snare. "Much better if he has a companion instead of running with the urchins, as I hear he does. One hears a good deal about your lad. Rizella?" A woman appeared in the doorway, and Matt gave a start. A fanciful mask of swirling blue and golden feathers hid most of Rizella's face, but the feathers on the rest of her costume did not hide very much else. She possessed the most spectacular bosom he had ever seen. "Oliver," she said, sinking to her knees, "would you like to walk out with me at festival?" She held up a mask like a red and green hawk, just the right size for a boy. Before Matt could open his mouth, Oliver broke free and rushed to her. "Oh, yes, please. Thank you." The ungrateful little lout laughed as she tied the hawk mask on his face and hugged him to her bosom. Hand in hand, they ran out, leaving Matt gaping. He recovered himself quickly enough when Tylin said, "Well for you, I am not a jealous woman, my sweet." She produced the long iron key to his door from behind her gold and silver belt, and then another just like it, waggling the pair at him. "People always keep keys in a box near the door." That was where he had left his. "And no one ever thinks there might be a second key." One key went back behind her belt. The other was turned in the lock with a loud click before joining its fellow. "Now, lambkin," she smiled. It was too much. The woman hounded him, tried to starve him. Now she locked them in together like he did not know what. "Lambkin?" Those bloody dice were bouncing around in his skull. Besides, he had important business to see to. The dice had never had anything to do with finding something, but... He reached her in two long strides, seized her arm, and began fumbling in her belt for the keys. "I don't have bloody time for..." His breath froze as the sharp point of her dagger beneath his chin shut his mouth and drove him right up onto his toes. "Remove your hand," she said coldly. He managed to look down his nose at her face. She was not smiling now. He let go of her arm carefully. She did not lessen the pressure of her blade, though. She shook her head. I do try to make allowances for you being an outlander, Gosling. But since you wish to play roughly, hands at your sides. Move. The knife point gave a direction. He shuffled backward on tiptoe rather than have his neck sliced. What are you going to do? He mumbled through his teeth. A stretched neck put a strain in his voice. A stretched neck, among other things. Well? He could try grabbing her wrist. He was quick with his hands. What are you going to do? Quick enough with the knife already at his throat. That was the question. That and the one he asked her. If she intended to kill him, a shove of her wrist right there would drive the dagger straight up into his brain. Will you answer me? That was not panic in his voice. He was not in a panic. Majesty? Tylan? Well, maybe he was in a bit of a panic, to use her name. You could call any woman in Ebu Dar duckling or pudding all day, and she would smile. But use her name before she said you could, and you found a hotter reception than you would for goosing a strange woman on the street anywhere else. A few kisses exchanged were never enough for permission either. Tylan did not answer, only kept him tiptoeing backward until suddenly his shoulders bumped against something that stopped him. With that flaming dagger never easing a hair, he could not move his head. But his eyes, that had been focused on her face, darted. They were in the bedchamber, a flower-carved red bedpost hard between his shoulder blades. Why would she bring him? His face was suddenly as crimson as the bedpost. No, she could not mean to. It was not decent. It was not possible. You can't do this to me, he mumbled at her. And if his voice was a touch breathy and shrill, he surely had cause. Watch and learn, my kitten, Tylan said, and drew her marriage knife. Afterward, a considerable time later, he irritably pulled the sheet up to his chest. A silk sheet. Nalesian had been right. The Queen of Altara hummed happily beside the bed, arms twisted behind her to do up the buttons of her dress. All he had on was the foxhead medallion on its cord, much good that had done, and the black scarf tied around his neck. A ribbon on her present, the bloody woman called it. He rolled over and snatched his silver-mounted pipe and tobacco pouch from the small table on the other side from her. Golden tongs and a hot coal in a golden bowl of sand provided the means for lighting. Folding his arms, he puffed away as fiercely as he frowned. You should not flounce, duckling, and you shouldn't pout. She yanked her dagger from where it was driven into a bedpost beside her marriage knife, examining the point before sheathing it. What is the matter? You know you enjoyed yourself as much as I did, and I... She laughed suddenly and oh so richly, resheathing the marriage knife as well. If that is part of what being Taviran means, you must be very popular. Matt flushed like fire. It isn't natural, he burst out, yanking the pipe stem from between his teeth. I'm the one who's supposed to do the chasing. Her astonished eyes surely mirrored his own. Had Tylan been a tavern maid who smiled the right way, he might have tried his luck. Well, if the tavern maid lacked a son who liked poking holes in people. But he was the one who chased. He had just never thought of it that way before. He had never had the need to before. Tylan began laughing, shaking her head and wiping at her eyes with her fingers. Oh, Pigeon, I do keep forgetting. You are in Ebu Dar now. I left a little present for you in the sitting room. She patted his foot through the sheet. Eat well today. You are going to need your strength. Matt put a hand over his eyes and tried very hard not to weep. When he uncovered them, she was gone. Climbing out of the bed, he tucked the sheet around him. For some reason, the notion of walking around bare felt uncomfortable. The bloody woman might leap out of the wardrobe. The garments he had been wearing lay on the floor. Why bother with laces, he thought sourly, when you can just cut somebody's clothes off? She had no call to slice up his red coat that way, though. She had just enjoyed peeling him with her knife. Not quite holding his breath, he pulled open the tall red and gilt wardrobe. She was not hiding inside. His choices were limited. Nerim had most of his coats for cleaning or mending. Dressing quickly, he chose a plain coat of dark bronze silk, then stuffed the sliced rags as far under the bed as he could reach until he could dispose of them without Nerim seeing. Or anyone else, for that matter. Too many people already knew entirely too much of what was going on between him and Tylan. There was no way he could face anybody knowing this. In the sitting room, he lifted the lid of the lacquerware box by the door, then let it fall with a sigh. He had not really expected Tylan to replace the key. He leaned against the door. The unlocked door. Light, what was he going to do? Move back to the inn? Burn why the dice had stopped before. Only he would not put it past Tylan to bribe Mistress Annan and Enid, or the innkeeper wherever he went. He would not put it past Nynaeve and Elaine to claim he had broken some agreement and put an end to their promises. Burn all women! A large parcel, elaborately wrapped in green paper, sat on one of the tables. It contained an eagle mask in black and gold, and a coat covered with feathers to match. There was also a red silk purse holding 20 gold crowns, and a note that smelled of flowers. I would have bought you an earring, Piglet, but I noticed your ear is not pierced. Have it done, and buy yourself something nice. He nearly wept again. He gave women presents. The world was standing on its head. Piglet? Oh, light! After a minute, he did take the mask. She owed him that much, for his coat alone. When he finally reached the small shaded courtyard, where they had been meeting each morning beside a tiny round pool of lily pads and brightly spotted white fish, he found Elysian and Brigitte ready for the festival of birds, too. The tyrant had contented himself with a plain green mask, but Brigitte's was a spray of yellow and red with a crest of plumes. Her golden hair hung loose, with feathers tied all down its length, and she wore a dress with a wide yellow belt, diaphanous, beneath more red and yellow feathers. It did not reveal nearly as much as Rosella's, yet it seemed about to every time she moved. He had never thought of her wearing a dress like other women. "Sometimes it's fun to be looked at," she said, poking him in the ribs when he commented. Her grin would have done for Nalician, saying how much fun it was to pinch serving girls. "There's a lot more to it than feather dancers wore, but not enough to slow me down. And anyway, I cannot see we'll have to move quickly on this side of the river." The dice rattled in his head. "What kept you?" she went on. "You didn't make us wait so you could tickle a pretty girl, I hope." He hoped he was not blushing. He was not certain what excuse he would have made, but just then half a dozen men wearing feathered coats strolled into the courtyard, all with those narrow swords on their hips, all but one wearing an elaborate mask with colorful crest and beak that represented no bird ever seen by human eyes. The exception was Beslan, twirling his mask by its ribbon. "Oh, blood and bloody ashes, what's he doing here?" "Beslan?" Nalician folded his hands in the pommel of his sword and shook his head in disbelief. "Why, burn my soul, he says he intends to spend the festival in your company. Some promise you two made, he says. I told him it would be deadly boring, but he wouldn't believe me." "I cannot think it is ever boring around Matt," Tylan's son said. His bow took them all in, but his dark eyes especially lingered on Brigitte. "I've never had so much fun as I did drinking with him in Lady Elaine's water on Swovon night. The truth, I remember little." He did not seem to recognize that water. Strangely, considering the taste she had shown in men, Beslan was fine-looking, maybe a little too fine, not at all her sort. Strangely, she smiled slightly and preened under his scrutiny. Right then, Matt did not care how out of character she behaved. Obviously, Beslan suspected nothing, or that sword of his likely would already be out, but the last thing under the light Matt wanted was a day in company with the man. It would be excruciating. He had some sense of decency, even if Besslin's mother did not. The only problem was Besslin, who took that bloody promise to attend all the festivals and feast days together very seriously. The more Matt agreed with Nalisian that the day they had planned would be dull beyond belief, the more determined Besslin grew. After a bit, his face began to darken, and Matt began to think that sword might be unsheathed yet. Well, a promise was a promise. When he and Nalisian and Brigida left the palace, half a dozen feathered fools strutted along. Matt was sure it would not have happened had Brigida been wearing her proper clothes. The whole lot of them kept eyeing her and smiling. "What was all that twisting around while he was spilling his eyes all over you?" he muttered as they crossed the Malhara. He tugged the ribbon holding the eagle mask tighter.
"I did not twist. I moved."
Her primness was so blatantly false, he would have laughed some other time.
"Slightly."
Abruptly, her grin was back, and she lowered her voice for his ear alone.
"I told you, sometimes it's fun to be looked at. Just because they're all too pretty doesn't mean I cannot enjoy them looking."
"Oh, you'll want to look at her," she added, pointing to a slender woman who went running by in a blue owl mask and rather fewer feathers than Rosella had worn. That was one of the things about Brigida. She would nudge him in the ribs and point out a pretty girl for his eyes readily as any man he had ever known, and expect him to point out in turn what she liked to see, which was generally the ugliest man in sight. Whether or not she chose to go half-naked today, a quarter anyway, she was, well, a friend. A strange world it was turning out to be. One woman he was beginning to think of as a drinking companion, and another after him as intently as he had ever pursued any pretty woman, in those old memories or his own. More intently, he had never chased any woman who let him know she did not want to be chased. A very strange world. The sun stood little more than halfway to its peak, but already celebrants filled the streets and squares and bridges. Tumblers and jugglers and musicians, with feathers sewn about their clothes, performed at every street corner, the music often drowned in laughter and shouting. For the poorer folk, a few feathers laced into their hair sufficed, pigeon feathers gathered from the pavement for the street children dodging about and the beggars. But masks and costumes grew more elaborate as purses grew heavier. More elaborate and frequently more scandalous. Men and women alike were often decked in feathers that revealed more skin than Rosella or that woman back in the Malhara. No commerce moved in the streets or canals today, though a number of shops seemed to be open, along with every tavern and inn, of course. But here and there a wagon made its way through the throng, or a barge was pulled along supporting a platform where young women and men posed in bright bird masks that covered their entire heads, with spreading crests sometimes rising a full pace, moving long, colorful wings in such a way that the rest of their costumes were exposed only in flashes, which was just as well, considering. According to Besslin, these settings, as they were called, were usually presented in guild halls and private palaces and houses. The entire festival normally took place indoors for the most part. It did not snow properly in Ebudar, even when the weather was as it should be. Besslin said he would like to see this snow one day. But apparently ordinary winter was cold enough to keep people from running around outdoors all but unclothed. With the heat, everything was spilling into the streets. "Wait until night fell," Besslin said. "Then Matt would really see something." As sunlight faded, so did inhibitions. Staring at a tall, slender woman gliding along through the crowd in mask and feathered cloak, and beyond that, six or seven feathers, Matt wondered what inhibitions some of these folk had left to shed. He almost shouted at her to cover herself with that cloak. She was pretty, but out in the street? Before the light and everybody? Those wagons carrying the settings attracted followers, of course. Thick knots of men and women who shouted and laughed as they tossed coins, and sometimes folded notes onto the wagons, and squeezed everyone else in the street aside. He became used to fleeing ahead until they could duck down a crossing street or waiting until the setting went by to cross an intersection or bridge.
While waiting, Birgitta and Nalician tossed coins to filthy urchins and dirtier beggars. Well, Nalician tossed. Birgitta concentrated on the children and pressed each coin into a grubby hand like a gift. In one of those waits, Beslin suddenly put a hand on Elysian's arm, raising his voice above the crowd and a cacophony of music coming from at least six different places. "Forgive me, Tyrin, but not him." A ragged man edged back into the throng, warily. Gaunt-cheeked and bony, he seemed to have lost whatever pitiful feathers he might have found for his hair.
"Why not?" Nalician demanded.
"No brass ring on his little finger," Beslin replied. "He's not in the guild."
"Light," Matt said. "A man can't even beg in this city without belonging to a guild."
Maybe it was his tone. The beggar leaped for his throat, a knife appearing in his grimy fist. Without thinking, Matt grabbed the man's arm and spun, slinging him away into the crowd. Some people cursed at Matt, some at the sprawling beggar. Some tossed the fellow a coin. From the corner of his eye, Matt saw a second skinny man in rags try to push Birgitta out of the way to reach him with a long knife. It was a foolish mistake to underestimate the woman because of her costume. From somewhere among those feathers, she produced a knife and stabbed him beneath the arm.
"Look out!" Matt shouted at her. But there was no time for warnings. Even as he shouted, he drew from his coat sleeve and threw side-armed.
The blade streaked past her face to sink into the throat of yet another beggar flaunting steel before he could plant it in her ribs. Suddenly there were beggars everywhere with knives and clubs studded with spikes. Screams and shouts rose as people in masks and costumes scrambled to get out of the way. Nalician slashed a man in rags across the face, sending him reeling. Beslin ran another through the middle, while his costumed cronies fought still others. Matt had no time to see more. He found himself back-to-back with Birgitta and facing his own adversaries. He could feel her shifting against him, hear her mutter curses, but he was barely conscious of it. Birgitta could take care of herself, and watching the two men in front of him, he was not sure he could do the same. The hulking fellow with the toothless sneer had only one arm and a puckered socket where his left eye had been, but his fist held a club 2 feet long encircled by iron bands that sprouted spikes like steel thorns. His rat-faced little companion still had both eyes and several teeth, and despite sunken cheeks and arms that seemed all bone and sinew, he moved like a snake, licking his lips and flicking a rusty dagger from hand to hand. Matt aimed the shorter knife in his own hand, first at one, then the other. It was still long enough to reach a man's vitals, and they danced and shuffled, each waiting for the other to leap at him first.
"Old Cully won't like this spar," the bigger man growled, and Ratface darted forward, rusty blade flashing from hand to hand.
He did not count on the knife that suddenly appeared in Matt's left hand and sliced across his wrist. The dagger clattered to the paving stones, but the fellow flung himself at Matt anyway. As Matt's other blade stabbed into his chest, he squealed, eyes going wide, arms wrapping around Matt convulsively. The bald fellow's sneer widened, his club rising as he stepped in. The grin vanished as two beggars swarmed over him, snarling and stabbing. Staring incredulously, Matt shoved Ratface's corpse away. The street was clear for 50 paces except for combatants, and everywhere beggars rolled on the pavement, two or three or sometimes four stabbing at one, beating him with clubs or rocks. Beslin caught Matt's arm. There was blood on his face, but he was grinning.
"Let's get out of here and let the Fellowship of Alms finish its business. There's no honor in fighting beggars, and besides, the guild won't leave any of these interlopers alive. Follow me."
Nalician was scowling. Doubtless he saw no honor in fighting beggars either. And Beslin's friends, several with their costumes awry, and one with his mask off so another could dab at a cut across his forehead. The man with the cut was grinning too. Birgitta bore not a scratch that Matt could see, and her costume looked as neat as it had back in the palace. She made her knife disappear. There was no way she could hide a blade under those feathers, but she did. Matt made no protest at being drawn away, but he did growl,
"Do beggars always go around attacking people in this city?"
Beslin might not appreciate hearing it called a bloody city. The man laughed.
"You are Tavirin, Matt. There's always excitement around Tavirin."
Matt smiled back with gritted teeth.
Bloody fool, bloody city, and bloody Taviran.
Well, if a beggar slit his throat, he would not have to go back to the palace and let Tylin peel him like a ripe pear. Come to think of it, she had called him her little pear.
Bloody everything!
The street between the dyer's shop and the Rose of the Elbar had its share of revelers, though not many scantily clad. Apparently you had to have coin to go near naked. Though the acrobats in front of the merchant's house on the corner came close, the men barefoot and bare-chested in tight, brightly colored breeches, the women in even tighter breeches and thin blouses. They all had a few feathers in their hair, as did the capering musicians playing in front of the small palace at the far corner. A woman with a flute, another blowing on a tall, twisted black tube covered with levers, and a fellow beating a tambour for all he was worth. The house they had come to watch looked shut up tight. The tea at the Rose was as bad as ever, which meant it was much better than the wine. Elysian stuck to the sour local ale. Birgitta said thanks without saying for what, and Matt shrugged it off silently. They grinned at each other and tapped cups. The sun rose, and Beslan sat balancing first one boot on the toe of the other, then the other way around. But his companions began growing restive, no matter how often he pointed out that Matt was Taviran. A scuffle with beggars was hardly proper excitement. The street was too narrow for any settings to pass. The women were not as pretty as elsewhere, and even looking at Birgitta seemed to pall once they realized that she did not intend to kiss even one of them. With protestations of regret that Beslan would not come, they hurried off to find somewhere more exhilarating. Nalisian took a stroll down the alley beside the dyers, and Brigida vanished into the Rose's murky interior to find, she said, whether there was anything at all fit to drink hidden in some forgotten corner. "I never expected to see a warder garbed like that," Beslan said, changing his boots around. Matt blinked. The fellow had sharp eyes. She had not removed her mask once. Well, as long as he did not know about. "I think you will be good for my mother, Matt." Choking, Matt sprayed tea into the passers-by. Several glared at him angrily, and one slender woman with a nice little bosom gave him a coy smile from beneath a blue mask he thought was meant to be a wren. She stamped a foot and stalked off when he did not smile back. Luckily, no one was angry enough to take it beyond glares before they too went on their way. Or maybe unluckily. He would not have minded if six or eight piled on him right then.
"What do you mean?" he said hoarsely.
Beslan's head whipped around in wide-eyed surprise.
"Why, her choosing you for her pretty, of course. Why is your face so red? Are you angry? Why?"
Suddenly he slapped his forehead and laughed.
"You think I will be angry? Forgive me. I forget you're an outlander. Matt, she's my mother, not my wife. Father died 10 years ago, and she has always claimed to be too busy. I'm just glad she chose someone I like. Where are you going?"
He did not realize he was on his feet until Beslan spoke.
"I just need to clear my head."
"But you're drinking tea, Matt."
Dodging around a green sedan chair, he half saw the door of the house open, and a woman with a blue-feathered cloak over her dress slip out. Unthinkingly, his head was spinning too much to think clearly, he fell in behind her.
Beslan knew. He approved. His own mother, and he...
"Matt," Elysian shouted behind him, "where are you going?"
"If I'm not back by tomorrow," Matt shouted back absently over his shoulder, "tell them they'll have to find it for themselves."
He walked on after the woman in a daze, not hearing if Nalisian or Beslan shouted again.
The man knew.
He remembered once thinking that Beslan and his mother were both mad.
They were worse. All of Ebu Dar was mad.
He was hardly aware of the dice still spinning inside his skull.
From a window of the meeting room, Rihanna watched Solane disappear down the street toward the river. Some fellow in a bronze coat followed in her wake, but if he tried to impede her, he would find out soon enough that Solane had no time for men and no patience with them. Rihanna was not sure why the urge had grown so strong today. For days it had come on almost with the morning and faded with the sun, and for days she had fought. By the strict rules they did not quite dare call laws, that order was given at the half-moon, still 6 nights off. But today, she had spoken the order before she thought, and been unable to make herself retract until the proper time. It would be well. No one had seen any sign of those two young fools calling themselves Elaine and Nynaeve anywhere in the city. Thank the light, there had been no need to take dangerous chances. Sighing, she turned to the others, who waited until she took her chair before seating themselves. It would be well, as it always had been. Secrets would be kept, as they always had been. But still, she had no touch of foretelling or anything of that sort, yet perhaps that overwhelming urge had been telling her something. 12 women watched her expectantly. "I think we should consider moving everyone who does not wear the belt to the farm for a little while." There was little discussion. They were the elders, but she was the eldest. In that, at least, there was no harm in behaving as Aes Sedai did.